Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 140 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. Hello Kelvin.
Hello Andy. Hello listeners.
And hello everybody. And today's show is we're going to delve a little bit more deeply, I know we've touched on this before, but we're going to delve a little bit more deeply into cognitive biases. Can you just remind us, Kelvin,
what cognitive biases are? Bias is essentially where your behaviour acts in a certain way that perhaps isn't the most rational, or kind of there's a break from what you ought to be doing. So the way I quite often describe it is tricks your mind plays on you. So where we do things that actually, if you step back and look at the patterns of human behavior, doesn't really make a lot of sense. And that has ramifications for marketers, because if you can understand these irrational behaviors that people have, you can potentially change your way of presenting products or services to, you know, respond to. And this isn't kind of, you know, kind of hypnotism or NLP or any of that type of stuff. It's more just about if people are going to behave in certain ways, you know, how can you respond to that for your mutual benefit? So it's triggered out of the world of behavioral economics. I've talked about some of the books that are really good in that. Two that I thoroughly recommend, Predictably Irrational and Nudge. And many of the examples I'm going to talk about in this podcast are sort of derived from the examples in those books and the studies that they make reference to. So I'm first going to talk about anchoring. And anchoring is kind of one of the fundamental cognitive biases that we have. So I'll talk to you a bit about a kind of approximation of one of the experiments that they did. So if I had 20 people in this room, Andy, with us, although it's only me and you,
yes,
and I were to ask them, originally they asked social security number, but we don't have those in the UK. So if I were to say, what's the last 2 digits of your mobile phone number?
Mm-hmm.
And I go around the room and one person's is 1, one person's is 10, one person's 20, 30, 40 and 50 and so on. So I've asked them that first question, what's the last 2 digits of your phone number? And then I present to them, here is a jar of brown M&Ms. How many M&Ms are there in that jar? Anchoring has found that the first number that they've said, where they've just talked, which is random, their phone number, their social security number, then influences the number they guess. So the people who said... first question on your piece of paper, what's the last 2 digits of your phone number? And mine is 78. And then I am more likely to guess a higher number in the jar of M&Ms than someone who had 10, which is peculiar, but that's because the first number has anchored what we think of going forward.
So, Kelvin, so if I said to you, Kelvin, I want you to guess my age.
Yeah.
And then I immediately said to you, Kelvin, how much money would you like to sponsor me for my marathon run in April?
Yeah.
I'd get loads of money.
Yeah, well, if you're old, you know, that's the question on that one, Andy. But yeah, and that's another example. There was another question that kind of showed anchoring, which was, what percentage of the African states do you think are members of the UN? More or less than 5% was the first question. And then how many do you think there are in total? Then they asked the same question, how many members of the UN, how many African states do you think are members of the UN? More or less than 35%, and how many in total? And the 35%, you know, people generally guessed higher because that first question had anchored them that 35% was around about the right sort of level. So that has implications for marketers as well. So, I mean, one area about this is that I think in day-to-day advice is anchoring has a huge impact on, you know, decisions that people make. So that means actually quite often making that first bid in a negotiation can be, you know, hugely important. So say you're talking to a recruiter, and we've been dealing with some recruiters recently, and they say, well, what salary do you, you know, are you looking for? So they've not told you what the salary is for the job, and they ask you what your salary you're looking for. If you go first, that's referenced them that, okay, well, they want it within 10-15% of that number.
Okay.
And you've got that as well when you're pricing projects. If they say, someone comes to you and say, how much does a podcast cost to produce? And you say, well, it, you know, it's between X and Y. Mm. They've now then know that it's between X and Y. If you'd have gone, well, what sort of money are you looking to spend? And they've gone, 10 grand. That's then referenced that as the number that it starts from, rather than you saying, you know, between 5 and 10.
Mm.
You know, it changes, you know, on those types of examples as well. And the context in which decisions take place is really, really important. A kind of really practical way that anchoring happens that I think is amazing is when you go into a restaurant, Addy, do you ever buy the cheapest bottle of wine on the menu? Most people are like me and buy the second cheapest bottle of wine on the menu.
You don't want to go for the absolute cheapest.
Yeah. But do you think that the fact that everyone does that, that restaurateurs might have realised that and perhaps actually made their cheapest bottle of wine the second cheapest bottle of wine? So say I've got two bottles of wine, one is $19.99 and one is $21.99. I could maybe go, okay, well, I'll keep the $21.99 one at $21.99 and make the £20 bottle
of
wine.
You know what you mean, Kelvin.
And make that a little bit more expensive. Mm. So actually the cheap one becomes the second cheapest. They're making even more margin on that. So there's all of those types of decisions as well. And, you know, I think a practical way this works is if someone's just put a £350 iPad in their basket on your shop and you then suggest that they buy a £30 case, it doesn't seem that expensive compared to if they'd done it the other way round. So there's...
What, they'd gone out to buy a case?
Yeah. So if right. I go and, you know, so if I'm buying a £300 case and it's like, oh, it's only another, you know, £30 on top, that's very different to then going out and spending the £30 independently, or even in terms of the sequencing. So say I've put I'm buying two items on a shop. One of them is £100 and one's £10. If I put the £100 one in first, it seems less of an obligation to put the £10 one in and buy that as well. Whereas if you put the £10 one in first, it then starts to, you know, potentially you could view it in a very different way then as the context of that as well. And I think actually this has ramifications for e-commerce sites, right? So the standard default way of presenting, if someone clicks on a category page of Amazon, they go to the tumble dryer section of Amazon. There's two ways it's sorted. Sometimes it's sorted lowest to highest price, which you don't see that often. Most frequently it's sold best selling. Right, so the bestseller is number one, the second bestseller is number two, and so on and so forth. That makes a lot of sense. It becomes a bit self-referencing. So things become bestsellers and stay bestsellers because they're always at the top of the category list. But actually, I think, and anchoring suggests, that people should be considering how that's presented. So say, for example, I go onto Amazon, I look to buy a laptop, and it's sorted by bestsellers. And the first one is £750, the second one's £750, the third one's £750, and then the fourth one's £1,000. Suddenly that £1,000 one looks really, really expensive compared to the other ones I've seen.
Mm.
So I'm less likely to buy it because it's expensive. But say it was sorted how I wanted it to be, and I had £1,500, £1,000, £750, suddenly that £1,000 one doesn't look quite so expensive. And, you know, I think that potentially anchoring suggests that, you know, maybe putting that cheap bottle of wine in the second place is the type of thing that kind of e-commerce people should be thinking about. By putting an expensive item that you know isn't going to sell to make the other items seem cheaper. And you'll see that quite a lot in the software as service kind of market, where they'll have like standard, pro, Excel.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, they're not even ever intending to sell any of those Excel ones. They just put that kind of ridiculously high number in there to make the other ones seem cheaper. So in this world where you're selling digital products, or you're selling, you know, products that you don't actually have to physically stock, be prepared to sometimes promote things that you don't think you're going to sell, because it provides an anchor point for the rest of the products that you are planning on selling. Does that sort of make sense?
It does make sense, actually, yeah. It does make sense.
So another big cognitive bias.
Very disturbing sense, but yes, it makes sense.
Yeah. And it's kind of this, I mean, I've rushed over and brushed over a lot of the science there, but there's science to back this up. Another big cognitive bias is the loss aversion idea. So people are very averse to losing. And actually, studies have shown that loss is felt twice as powerfully as gain. So if you think about a kind of emotional impact of winning something and losing something, or gaining something and losing something, the loss is felt twice as strong. So the change in your mood of getting £50 is equivalent to losing 100. So actually, you know, there's those types of decisions that go on there as well, that people hate to lose things. And that's why you get ideas like sunk costs, where, you know, well, I've spent so much money on this, what's another, you know, amount of money to try and do that as well. So people generally hate to lose things, and they feel loss much more acutely than gain. So if you want someone to, you know, do something, you've got to be doing a lot more than what they're losing on that front. So how's that impact for internet marketers? Well, if you've got a subscription service, or you know, you're providing a retainer, make it clear what someone would lose if they were to end that, as opposed to talk about what they'll gain by staying. So if people think, oh, I'm going to lose the X, they're less likely to leave, because if they want to replace X, they've got to do they've got to do two times it to be as good. And this is why the free trial model works so well. It's why it works so well in direct marketing. It's why it works so well in software as service. That once someone has something, they value it twice as much as if they didn't have it, you know. So there's that whole idea as well. So that's why free trials work. So it's all about small first-time buy-in there. So if you can get someone to trial you, that's great. But if you can get them to spend a little bit of money to buy what it is that you've got, what you do, what you offer, it's then very likely that they'll feel the loss aversion of ceasing to continue to work with you, and then you've got the opportunity for the upsell after that. Another area of a common cognitive bias is the choice supportive bias. So essentially, people had to, in the experiment, there were two cars, the car, you know, like a Ford and a Vauxhall, say there's two cars that they had to choose. They had a list of the specification of those, and then the person had to choose which of those two cars they would prefer, right? And then afterwards, they took those two groups, interviewed them at a later date, and gave them a list of like extras that the cars had. And they had to say, did your car have these extras? Did the other car have those extras? And people really overvalued the ones that they'd chosen. Right, so they'd say, I'd chosen the Vauxhall, well, that definitely had air conditioning, even though it might not have done, or that definitely had an iPod player, but it didn't have. Because people tend to, once they've made a decision, really appreciate that, you know, and it's that kind of fanboy mentality that once you've paid the money for the thing, that you then tend to think it's better than it really actually objectively is. And people tend to overvalue what they own, right? So, I mean, I've got a Kona Syndicone, right, which I bought in 2000, so what, 11 years ago now, and I've hardly ever used it, because I'm more into road cycling, if I do any cycling at all, because I'm a lazy so-and-so nowadays. But I've never sold it, because I've always thought it's worth a bit more than anyone else is prepared to pay for it. Now, if I'd have sold it, had accepted that it wasn't worth you know, it cost me £750 when it was new, something like that. And then after a couple of years, could have sold it for £500. It's like, well, it's definitely not, it's worth more than £500. I would have had £500. Now I'd struggle to sell it for £20. Do you see what I mean? So
I do, yeah.
People do very much overvalue what they own. But that's, you know, good value for testimonials, right? So people, once someone's bought your service, they are very likely to, you know, appreciate that more than perhaps genuinely they should. So you can use that to your benefit. Get these satisfied customers who are, supporting their choice with a bias in the future to recommend your products, which will help you get more people to choose you, and then, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy on that front. Another idea is hyperbolic discounting. So if I
sounds painful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So given the choice between, if I say to you, Andy, you can have £50 now, or I'll give you £100 in a year, right? Statistically, in the experiments that they've done, most people would choose the £50 now, right?
I would.
Yeah. Now, given the decision of £50 now versus £100 in 6 years, now it flips, right? And more people choose £100 in 6 years. Now, that doesn't make any sense, right? Because,
really?
Yeah, that's what
tests
shown.
Have shown.
And that's weird, right, isn't it?
Very weird.
Because it's further away and it's the same amount of money.
Mm.
And what this shows is people tend to, you know, smaller instant gratification is often preferred over larger gratification in the future. Mm. So that kind of £50 now is better in most people's eyes than £100, in a year's time. But people think very differently when it comes to the future, right? So this is tied into the fact that why, like, people, you know, diets and the like. So, oh yeah, I'll give that up tomorrow. I'll have that, you know, McDonald's today. Mm. I won't have it tomorrow. But actually, in the future, I'm going to be really, really fit. It's that similar. People think about short-term, mid-term and long-term very, very differently, you know, and you need to understand that. So you should be structuring your incentives appropriately, right? So if you're giving away something free, make it free instantly rather than you'll get a discount on over the next 12 months. So actually, if you're going to kind of give someone £10 a month every month for the next 12 months and give them £120 in total, you'd probably be better off giving them £50 tomorrow than £120 over those next 12 months. False consensus, we've talked about a little bit before. We did a whole episode on it, so I won't go into too much, background to that. But false consensus is the fact that we tend to think that people think the same as us, and we assume that everyone agrees with us. So my advice there is test big things, right? So people will test little advert copy all the time, right? They don't test the name of the company or whether they should launch the product in the first place. And also appreciate that a crowd of people can be wrong, right? So if you get a group of people in a focus group and have one strong-willed person in that focus group, they will influence the rest of the group as well. And to sum up, never assume anything about your audience, right? Test things, look at tests other people have done and learn from them, and don't always rely on your gut instinct. It will often be right, your gut instinct, but actually there's dozens of ways in which we as a species don't react as you would expect us to. And therefore, you should be testing everything you possibly can in your campaign.
Sage advice there, Mr. Kelvin Newman. Nearly forgot your name then. I was so engrossed with that with that strange piece of data that you presented earlier that,
yeah,
I almost forgot your name.
But yeah, if people are interested in that, the two big books are Predictably Irrational and Nudge.
Are the same author or different authors?
Predictably Irrational is by Dan Ariely, and Nudge is by someone Failer and someone else. I can't remember their
Another
names.
Person.
If you search Nudge, it'll come up.
Well, thanks, Kelvin. And I think that wraps it for the show today. So I've been Andy White.
And I've been drinking a glass of water, but my name is Kelvin Newman.
And this has been Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And just quickly, next week's show.
Next week's show is,
as he frantically looks at the spreadsheet,
all about backlink analysis and how you can do backlink analysis significantly better than most people do.
All coming up on next week's Internet Marketing. See you next time, folks. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.